Hello, my name's Cameron Roberts. I'm the Events Content Manager for ICIS. And I'm joined today by John Richardson, who is the Senior Consultant for Asia for ICIS. And we're going to talk a little bit about market dynamics for polyolefins, including China and US relations, as well as how COVID-19 has impacted the industry. So, John, do you mind giving yourself a little bit of an introduction? What's your role at ICIS? How do you kind of interact with the market?
Yeah, thanks, Cameron. I've been at ICIS for sort of 23 years. Spent a lot of time in Singapore from 1997 to 2010, originally as a journalist. I joined the consulting team around 2008. So my real speciality actually is polyolefins. So I spent a lot of time talking to customers, mainly in the Asia Pacific, about supply, demand, margins, pricing, you know, where the markets are heading, trying to forecast the future, which is always good fun.
Okay, great. It sounds like I've got the right person then. So, diving straight into it and really top level for you, John, what's the major demand changes that you've seen in polyolefins that have been caused by the pandemic?
Well, Cameron, it's been quite a remarkably good year. I think when the crisis began globally in about March, April, we all thought, everybody thought it would be really bad. That demand would collapse because of the scale of the economic damage. This was going to be something much worse than the global financial crisis of 2008-9. But what instead has happened is that increased hygiene needs for disinfectant bottles, disinfectant wipes, the face mask, which is made from polypropylene non-woven, that's really supported polyolefins demand. So have government stimulus in the West. So low-paid workers are much better off than they were before the pandemic. And so what we're seeing at the retail end of the business in the supermarkets is that low-paid workers are spending more money on luxury foods, chocolate biscuits, than they were during the global financial crisis, when there wasn't that same level of support for low-paid workers who are facing, a real mortgage repossessions in the US. Of houses, and the sovereign debt crisis and huge job losses in Europe, which came a bit later. So really the polyolefins markets has received all this support. So that was packaging, that packaging side of the business has been very well supported. So hygiene needs, people not having to cut back the budgets in terms of the food they're buying. And then there's been another dynamic, which is a bit more recent, which has been really from July onwards, as people convert their homes into offices. Home working is now a factor of our lives, probably a permanent factor. So all the office furniture that goes into, PP fibers, polypropylene fibers, for instance, for furniture, and electronics, polypropylene, injection grade polypropylene and copolymer PP, going into laptops and computers, which are mainly made in China. So you've seen these amazing growth of electronics exports from 14% in September, year on year, as people buy more computers for their homes. So this has really supported polypropylene demand. So it hasn't been as bad as people expected. I mean, just go through the numbers now. United States, we expected negative growth. Polyethylene, likely to be plus 5%. Europe's likely to be positive growth this year. Getting on to China, this is amazing now. Our base case forecast for 2020 was growth of 4%. It looks more like being 13%, an extra 2.6 million tons of demand, more than we had expected. That's based on the data so far this year. Well, actually up to August, the latest data. So there you see, Cameron, in China, there's 13% growth of polypropylene versus what you expected to be 4%. Polyethylene looks likely to be 7 to 8% versus what we thought would have been 4% in China again. So globally, it's been good, but there are some markets that are struggling. Some of the poorer developing countries where the increase in absolute or extreme poverty, which is defined as living on less than $1.90 a day, that's really bad, because then you have people who been pushed back into extreme poverty and can't afford even the most basic of modern day consumer goods. So I think in countries like India, some poorer parts of Asia Pacific, Africa and Central and Latin America, things have been really bad because of this increasing extreme poverty, the strain on budgets because of these poor healthcare systems. You know, the healthcare budgets are very constrained anyway, the pandemic. Collapse of remittances. So overseas workers, say, working in Dubai, can't send money home to Bangladesh because they've not been working. So I think the developing world is one thing that's bad. The developed world's been better than we expected because of the government stimulus. As I said, China's doing really well. And a lot of that is to do with exports of finished goods to the West for our new pandemic lifestyles.
Yes, there are definitely some positive notes there. And I think having spoken to a couple of other of our experts from different markets, it sounds like polyolefins is certainly surviving a little bit better than much of petrochemicals, I think. You obviously mentioned China had seen a really big uptick, certainly more than we expected earlier on in the year. I mean, how has that impacted kind of their market position? Obviously, they've seen a lot more exports now, but do you think that's going to impact where they sit in the value chain for long term?
That's a good question, Cameron. I think it increases the importance of the Chinese market to the world. Become even more important in terms of overall economic growth, because it's the only major economy that will have positive growth this year. And I think their share of global polyolefins demand will increase. So I think that's an issue. I mean, it's probably worth saying that it's very positive, but there are big risks ahead. And I think one of the things is this government stimulus in the West as it's restructured and changed. You know, the furlough schemes in the EU and Great Britain, as those furlough schemes are restructured and reduced, we suddenly find a lot of people will be permanently unemployed, have had their jobs frozen, if you like. So that's a big issue. The United States, the Congress can't agree on a new stimulus deal. That's not likely to happen until after the election now. In fact, we've got 48 hours. There might be a deal within 48 hours, but by the time you hear this podcast, a deal may have been done. There's a chance there won't be a deal until after the presidential election. But what we do know with the US is because that stimulus deal ran out at the end of July, we've had 2 months of poorer growth probably in polyolefins because of the loss of that. The unemployment, extreme unemployment insurance checks were cancelled from the end of July. It's $600 per person who was unemployed. So that will have negatively affected polyolefins since the end of July in the United States. So it really is this uncertainty, Cameron, around government spending, which I think is negative for the developed world. The risk for China is if exports slow down because of the renewed lockdowns in the West. And at some point, this is very hard to predict, we'll have finished kitting out our homes as offices. We'll reach that tipping point where more people have kitted out their homes as offices, and demand for electronics might decline. I mean, face mask demand will be there for a long time, won't it? So the risks ahead, and a lot of the Chinese recovery is export based and dependent on what's happening in the West. So it's complicated.
Yes, so I think it certainly is complicated, isn't it? I think one thing that as has historically kind of exacerbated China's relations with many countries in petrochemicals is their relationship with the US. Obviously, for many years, we had the US-China trade war. I don't necessarily think it's died off just yet, but it seemed to have cooled in recent months, I guess. But I mean, what's, in your opinion, what's their current relationship and how is that impacting the olefins?
People were thinking things might change if Joe Biden wins and there'll be less confrontational approach by the United States towards China. But my view is different to that. I think that there's a bipartisan support in the United States for confronting China. And this really is very much like Britain and Germany at the turn of the 20th century, an incumbent superpower and a rising superpower. And it's the trade war's calmed down, as you mentioned, but technology war, it's now denying China access to the technologies it needs to carry on growing really well. Geopolitical, China's activity in the South China Sea, its rising military presence, strength. This is something that goes right through the State Department, right through the Pentagon, and across the Democratic and Republican parties. So I think that if Biden were to win, there wouldn't be not a change of tone, certainly. I think that they were more likely to engage China on climate change. But we're still heading towards, I feel, a Cold War. And for polyolefins, what this means is, and I've been writing about this on the blog for the past three or four years, we're drifting towards a bipolar world where we'd have two trading zones, two geopolitical zones, one led by China, one led by the United States. And you look at the polyethylene and polypropylene data for demand, the ICIS data, you can draw up what that would mean. And, you know, there's one scenario where nearly 70% of global polyethylene demand is within the China zone, about 68% within the China zone. If China attracts, say, the whole of Africa into its zone of influence, all of Asia Pacific, Northeast Asia, ex-China, which is Taiwan, Japan and South Korea and North Korea, all those countries are within its sphere of influence. And then it, you know, dominates demand at the expense of the United States. And situation there where the United States cannot export to most of the developing world because of trade barriers. That's how it could split. Or it could be very different. It could be the United States get a lot of the developing world on their side. It's a bit more evenly split. But the trade flows we've been used to, Cameron, where you can move products seamlessly from one country to another, which is really since the Berlin Wall came down in 1989. That's the kind of globalization, increased globalization we've seen in the polyolefins business. And all that's mattered is having low feedstock cost, good logistics. You can move products anywhere in the world with minimal trade barriers. And I think that's the big change now, that the split between the US and China is long-term. I don't see, you know, any way back from it. And it's a new Cold War. So where you build your investments is almost probably more important now than feedstock advantage.
I think that leads quite nicely onto my next point, actually, about choosing where you invest, really, because we've spoken a lot about, you know, geopolitics and how regions are affecting the market. But I do just want to touch on, I guess, private businesses and how companies kind of have to react to this, because these are very large and some might say like world shaking events that are impacting this market. So how do companies, you know, be resilient against those changes? What's kind of the, how do they keep pace with this changing narrative?
I think they've got to look at that relationship between the US and China very closely, and who's aligning with China, who's aligning with the US. Look at who's got the upper hand, you know, who's going to win this great game, this new great geopolitical game, you know, same as the clash between, well, historically it's different. I see more like the clash between Germany and the UK rather than the clash between the US and the old Soviet Union. You know, there's more similarities there, I think, but it's constantly staying on top of who's got an upper hand, what that means for economic growth. And if China can't get access to the semiconductors it needs, what does that mean for demand growth in the China market? And polyolefins demand growth, what does it mean for the Chinese economy? So you've got to monitor that geopolitical aspect of access to technology, what it means for the Chinese economy. You know, that's at one level, you know, very sort of, you know, what's the growth going to be like over the next 5 years in China if it can't get access to that technology because of US sanctions, control over technology? And I think then you've got to look at the changing trade flows. If China is about to announce its 14th five-year plan, I think what you're going to see is China be very aggressive in terms of adding new petchem capacity, polyolefins capacity, and will run its, you know, its existing plants very hard. So this is very important now, because in polypropylene, China can become self-sufficient by 2022. In fact, it could be a net exporter by 2022 from being the world's biggest importer of PP. So it's monitoring that, you know, the opportunity to Chinese plants, new investments in China, how it responds to the geopolitical challenges of a very different world as it tries to increase its import self-sufficiency. I mean, lots of different levels, Cameron. I mean, it could be that China also decides to buy more polymer from its friends in the Belt and Road region. This is this new super trading zone is inventing, this giant block. countries like Iran, the China's spending some $300 billion worth of investment in Chinese, sorry, in Iranian oil, gas, and petrochemicals. So you could have a situation where China builds a lot of polyethylene plants in Iran and then exports from Iran to China at preferential rates. So it's complicated, but you know, really you think these investment decisions will be geopolitical. And going back to short-term growth will be geopolitical. You know, the access to technology, what does it mean for the Chinese economy, as an example?
Well, I think that's certainly going to make for a complex future then, isn't it, for any company, really?
Absolutely. I mean, you can't just take GDP as a multiple. In the old days, Cameron, as you look at GDP and say polyethylene will grow at, if it's in the US, it's mature, so it's going to go at 0.5, say, times GDP, and that's more or less your forecast. It's a lot more complicated than now, Cameron. It's a lot of politics involved, a lot of assessing government strategy, government policy. It's tough. Yeah,
I think nowadays, as you were saying, it's more about learning the other factors that are in play rather than just pure financial flow, I think. And that does lead me on to the outro, I think. So it's been really great talking to you, John. You know, it's fantastic to hear where you think the market's going. And obviously, you've got great insights into that geopolitical landscape. But I do just want to quickly say to anyone listening, if you do want to learn more about the external forces that are impacting the polyolefins market, or if you just want to meet with fellow poly experts, then I do encourage you to attend the ICIS Polyolefins Virtual Conference, which is taking place on the 3rd to the 4th of November this year. It's completely free. It's online. You can join it from your laptop at home. And yeah, it'll give you a really great insight into where the market is going as well as where it is right now. But as I said, that's it from me and John. So thank you very much for joining me today, John.
Thank you, Cameron.
Great. And I hope you all have a nice day.